Welcome to Clued Up with Maria B, the behind-the-scenes photography podcast. Clued Up is your insider's view to building successful magazine-style photo shoots. We talk design and concept, fashion and style, tech, social media, and of course, business, plus so much more, including how to avoid common photography pitfalls. You'll also meet some special guests who work behind the camera and in front of the lens. Whether you're an aspiring photographer, a portrait photographer thinking about starting your own business, or you just have an interest in what it takes to plan and execute professional shoots, you've come to the right place. I'm your host, Maria B. Now let's get you clued up. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Clued Up with Maria B., the behind-the-scenes photography podcast. Today's episode is called Organization is Everything. And in parentheses, you should organize everything. Today we're going to talk about how to organize so much of your photography life. If there's one thing I can emphasize to anyone who owns a camera and is considering making this more than a hobby, it's this. Organization is everything. If you want to be successful as a photographer, you've got to know where everything is, making it so much easier to locate whatever you need when you need something. Whether it's information about a client, a product, a vendor that you work with, or most importantly, your gear and your equipment. Simply put, there are so many parts to photography, and especially to a photo shoot, that lack of organization is simply detrimental to your photography well-being. It's detrimental to your client, to your workflow, and to everything that you produce. Being organized assures a routine, it assures structure, and it has got to be an essential part of your workflow and your business. So let's break down this episode to segments of your photography life that require organization. And I've divided them into three distinct areas. First, contact and interaction with clients, team members, and business partners. Number two, gear and equipment. And under this category, we include the gear that you carry, gear in your studio or your home, and gear that you store. And number three, post-processing. And I've included post-processing because even though this podcast is about what goes on behind the scenes and leading up to photo shoots, a lot of what happens in post-processing is dependent on exactly what you've done before that time. So that's why post-processing is included when it comes to organization. Let's start out talking about contact and interaction with clients, with your team members, and your business partners. First, I put all of my clients into my phone. I put their last name, first name, all that goes without saying. But on my phone, it gives you a particular section where you can list a person's business or the name of the company. And under company, I put client. For hairstylist, I put in the hairstylist's name. And under company, I put hairstylist. And now, same with makeup artist. Why do I do it this way? So let's say I'm setting up for a shoot and I need a hairstylist or a makeup artist. I go into my contact list and at the very top, I put makeup artist and everyone who is listed as being a makeup artist under company will then show up. I don't have to go searching through my contact list and I don't have to try to remember the names of the people that I'm trying to find. All of the makeup artists will show up on the contact list. Something with a little bit more capability is an app, or I guess it's best to call it an online software that I use called Airtable. Now, I'm going to speak about Airtable a little bit more later on, but just know that in Airtable, I have a specific table for clients that includes their contact information, the dates for their shoot, whether it's an upcoming shoot or if it's a shoot that's in the past, and notes about each client, their likes, their dislikes, their favorite colors, styles that they prefer, the types of shoots, be it boudoir, lifestyle, business. Even things like their musical preferences or things like allergies, just to make sure I don't, you know, order food that they may be allergic to. Anything that's worth knowing, I put in Airtable. I also use Airtable for my team members, such as hairstylists and makeup artists. This is a great way to keep track of which artist has worked with which client and the type of styles the makeup artist specializes in. And any quirky information that may be important that may actually be helpful in choosing a makeup artist or a hairstylist for a particular client. Another reason this comes in handy is if you have a client who had a really great rapport with a makeup artist or a hairstylist, and that client is coming back again, it'll be nice for the client to have the same makeup artist that they already have an established rapport with. Airtable allows me to look at more people, more clients, or team members at one time versus looking on my phone at a contact list, and I can see more information at one time. Airtable also allows you to develop what's called relatable or relational tables. So relational tables means that if I have a table of clients and then I have a table of makeup artists, in the makeup artist table, I could see which makeup artist worked with which client, and I can click on that client and it'll open up to that client's information in the client table. Now that sounds a little bit confusing, but believe me, you just have to do it once and you'll get it. It's a great way to keep track of venues that you've worked in, especially if you're an event photographer. You can include contact individuals at a venue, details about the space, and other relevant information. You can also use it for outdoor events. For vendors, this is a great way to keep track of things such as your specific ID number when dealing with a vendor or business partner. Also, your product numbers for items that you order and order frequently, contact people at companies, and certainly the cost of particular products, because Airtable also has mathematic calculation ability in it. So it's a fantastic app or software to use for business. And by the way, I recommend not just using Airtable for people, but also using it for businesses. It's a great way to keep track of venues that you've worked in, especially if you're an event photographer. You can include contact individuals at a venue, details about the space, and other relevant information. You can also use it for outdoor events. You can use Airtable for almost anything to organize your information about people or places or vendors that you work with. Airtable gives you the ability to organize a lot of information that you then have access to wherever you are. There's an app that syncs your information on your phone or tablet, and of course it's available on your desktop or laptop. I'll include the link to Airtable in the show notes, and just know Airtable is actually free. So that's a fantastic resource and you should really try it. And it's so much better than having an Excel spreadsheet or something else that's not as lively. And it's actually quite easy to use, so give it a try. So just continuing on with organizing your interactions, and this is something I think I've spoken about before, but I just want to reiterate the importance of this, and that is using a calendar. I know that sounds relatively simple, but sometimes we need to be reminded about the simple things that help us in our business and help us stay organized. So use a calendar that has an invite function on it. So I believe now with most telephones, I know on my phone, if you put something on a particular date, you also have the option to invite others. So you want to use a calendar that has that function so that you can send out the date and time of an event, of a photo shoot, and have your recipients respond to it. This way, it's never in question about the date and the time, and you won't have that unfortunate experience that I had when I had a makeup artist who didn't show up and then told me she put it on the wrong date on her calendar. And I take full responsibility for that because I should have done what I just described to you, which is to use the invite function in your calendar. Always remember, if you've sent out an invite and you don't get a response, send a gentle reminder. Send one gentle reminder, maybe send a second gentle reminder, and then start calling. And if you're still not getting a response, you might want to start working on a plan B. If you want to use a more sophisticated calendar, you can always move up to something like Acuity Scheduling. It's definitely more sophisticated than your typical phone calendar. It allows you to put in a lot more detail about your appointments. And it also has the capability to send out reminders. Acuity Scheduling has a free model that's usable. And then there are limitations, and I'm not so sure what those limitations are. I have the paid version now. I did have the free version for a while. But the great thing about Acuity, like many other calendar apps, is that you have multiple calendars for your business or businesses. So you can see your times that are blocked off all in front of you, even though you have multiple calendars. So it's great for keeping organized. It just takes a little while to learn to manipulate it. There's a tiny, tiny learning curve, but it's an excellent app for scheduling. So next, let's move on to talk about what many photographers love to talk about, and that is your gear. Organizing your gear is an absolute essential, whether it's gear that you store and just pull out as you need, or if it's stuff that you carry in your photography backpack or bag, or if it's just gear that happens to be open and available because you use it pretty regularly. Obviously, how you organize is up to you, but here are some examples of some of the things that I do or that I recommend. I've spoken about this probably at least two or three times. You guys are probably tired of hearing me talk about storing my SD cards, but I store all my SD cards together in a little think tank case. I've talked about this a couple of times, but just briefly once again, I have a system for storing my cards. They're all face up, meaning they're usable. If I have to switch out a card out of my camera and put a new one in, that SD card that's used is then put into the think tank holder face down. So I know if I need to pull out a new card for any reason, I can't pull that card because it's face down. And that means it's got photos that need to be uploaded or ingested and stored on my computer or external drive. The exception to keeping all of my cards together is, and if you've listened to prior episodes, you also know about this, that one card, I tell everyone, put it in your wallet or put it in something that's always with you. If you have camera gear that's with you all the time, put it in your camera gear because you never know what's going to happen. You might forget to load up your cards. You may think you have your little pack with you and, you know, something may happen, whatever. Always keep a card someplace where you don't even think about the fact that you have that card until you absolutely need it. For me, I keep a 128 gigabyte card in my wallet behind my driver's license. And as a matter of fact, I'll share with you that some weeks ago when I recorded an episode that specifically talked about this, I questioned whether or not I had an extra card in my wallet. And I went crazy. I could not find that card because it's the only 128 gigabyte card that I own. So I went crazy looking through everything that I have, thinking, well, I must have put that down and maybe it slipped between a chair or it slipped, you know, in my couch or something, and I just can't find it. And then the other day, I said to myself, you know, that's really not like you. You store everything, you manage everything. Where would you put your extra card? You'd put it in your wallet. And where in your wallet would you put it? You'd put it behind your driver's license because you always have your driver's license with you. Lo and behold, open up my wallet. What's there? My 128 gigabyte card. Why? Because that's what I do. I always keep an extra card in my wallet. whether it's your wallet, whether it's your purse, but it's got to be something that's always with you. Even if it's like, you know, you keep it in the glove compartment of your car, which I don't recommend, you know, because of heat and everything, but just keep it someplace where you put it there and you forget about it until you need it. So just moving on with more things that I keep organized. I store all my batteries together in a wooden box it's actually a cute little decorative box that sits in my living room, and you'd never know that's what I use it for. But all of my batteries are stored in there, including my Endloop rechargeable batteries, regular cell batteries, chargeable batteries for different equipment such as monitors or my camera. They're all in this one place, except that they're in different plastic bags. So the batteries for my cameras in a separate plastic bag. My Endloop batteries, a separate plastic bag. And I keep the chargers for everything also in this box. So if I need to pull out an LED light, for example, to make a little video, and I have to charge the battery for the LED light, I know it's in the place where I keep all of my batteries, and the charger is also there. The only exception is that I keep two battery chargers for my primary camera, the D750, out and plugged in with battery constantly charging, which I know people say you shouldn't keep your batteries charged. But at least this way, if something happens and I have to walk out the door with my camera right away for some reason, I know I've got two freshly charged batteries ready to go. Next, my lenses. All of my lenses are stored in one drawer. They're kept in one place. It's a huge drawer. And the exception to this are just the lenses that I keep in, or that I would put into my backpack if I'm going to do a shoot. That too is very organized, and it tends to be the same. And I will talk about that shortly. All of my camera's lenses are kept in one place. So if I need them, I know exactly where to go. Extra lens caps. I have one in the same drawer. I have one clear plastic bag, and I keep extra lens caps and, like, you know, the cap for the back of your lens. I have some extras of those, and they're kept all in one place. Cameras. If you've listened to me speak before in other episodes, you know I have my D750. I have my D7200, and I have my D300. So the 7200 and the 300 are my backup cameras, and they're kept in one particular place as well. I also have other cameras that I use, and they're stored in that same place. If I need a camera, just got to open up that huge drawer, and they're all there looking at me. So other gear and other equipment, such as my ND filters, gels, MagMod gear, camera cleaning cloths, wipes, spare caps, and just all of the little things that you gather with camera equipment. They're separated into plastic bags based on the type of equipment, and they're all kept in one place. My audio equipment for recording videos and such, all stored in one place. Light modifiers. Light modifiers are stored in one place in my studio, as are light stands. In the studio, I have all of my backdrops folded up on one shelf. All of my speed lights are in one drawer. All equipment related to my strobes are stored in one case and on a shelf. I think you get the picture. I know it sounds a little OCD, but believe me, when you need something, you may not be able to recall exactly where it is, but if you have a system for storing your equipment, you'll know exactly where to go to find it. I just like keeping similar gear, similar items together. So like I said a little while ago, the exception to this is my camera bag, because my camera bag has the stuff that I don't keep my equipment that I'm going to use for a shoot, or all of the equipment that I'm going to use for a shoot at the studio. Obviously, the more valuable things are with me and on my person. So that's in my camera bag. And just because it's in my camera bag doesn't mean it's any less organized, because it's the same principle. You need to know where everything is. Of course, the type of bag that you use plays an important role in this. For example, I use a Rugard, that's Ruggard backpack, and I'll put the link to that in the show notes. In the past, I've also used Kelly Moore bag, and I continue to use a Think Tank airport bag. I call it a bag, but it's actually on wheels. It's like a carry-on case, and if I'm traveling and I need to travel with a fair amount of equipment, that's the case that I use. Now, while I have a system for each and every bag, today I'm just going to talk about one thing, and that's how I carry my equipment and my gear in the Rugard backpack. So the backpack can hold one camera body, which for me is the D750, with a long lens attached. So just to maximize space, I can attach the 70 to 200 millimeter lens to the body of the D750, and it fits nicely in the backpack. That also leaves me with enough room to hold the 24 to 70 lens, my 85 millimeter prime, and my 50 millimeter prime lens, plus a speed light. Obviously, on the inside of the pack, I also have more room so that I can carry my X-ray color checker and my light meter, and those two things are always together. On the inside mesh of the bag, I keep accessories such as lens cleaners, speed light stands. Those are the tiny speed light stands that come with the speed light when you purchase one. My end loop batteries for the speed light, extra caps, extra camera batteries, the camera battery charger, the end loop battery charger, and other necessities, including wipes to keep the lenses and gear clean. In the outside compartment, I then keep gels or MagMod gear that I may use. I keep business cards, pens, and other items that if I lost are easily replaceable. This pack also comes with a sturdy hook, so if I'm going someplace, like, not that I'll be shooting runway anytime soon, but in the past, when I've shot runway and I wanted to use a monopod, the monopod folds down and it attaches to the clamp that's on the side of the backpack. So while there's a lot of stuff in my pack, it's pretty much always packed in the same way so that I can easily access whatever I need in the same place every time. So it's the same principle. Sometimes instead of using the pack, I'll use my photography bag, the Kelly Moore bag, or a friend of mine a few years ago, 2 years ago, I think, as a birthday gift, gave me a bag she had made and has my initials inside. It's padded for camera gear. So sometimes if I'm not carrying that much stuff, I would use that bag. And same principle, I'm not going to go through the ins and outs, but when I pack a camera bag, it's packed a certain way so that if I need to reach for something, it's easy accessibility. Why is this so important? Most photographers are going to tell you that no matter what, whether it's studio work, runway work, outdoor work, time is always of the essence. It doesn't matter what the style of the shoot is. And that's not to say that you should shoot hurriedly and feel as though if you're not shooting, your client's going to think you don't know what you're doing. You want to shoot in such a way where, as I've said before, you have a particular flow, that you have a particular way of doing things where you're not hurrying, but you're working with consistency. Maybe you pause once in a while to double check something, but you want to have a consistent flow. Well, if you have to fumble around to find your gear, it kind of upsets the flow of things. It upsets your flow as a photographer, and definitely it upsets your client, although they may not express that to you. Something internal may click, like, you know, you're a professional photographer. How come you don't know where your gear is? Also, if you're doing something like an event or a runway show or anything that's truly time dependent, you can miss a really important moment if you're looking in your bag for something because you don't know exactly where it is. And those are moments that may not occur again. And how embarrassing is it if somebody catches that with their smartphone
you know, and a week later, people are looking through photos online. They're like, oh, that's a really nice photo. That's a nice moment. The photographer didn't capture that. So, you know, you want to be prepared, and being prepared means being organized. So the next thing we're going to talk about as far as organization is your photo storage. Now here I'm going to talk about when I import my photos into Lightroom. This is not about backing up your photos for true storage. This is in the immediate time when you import your photos. We're going to talk about true storage in a future episode. So although ingesting your photos obviously occurs after your photo shoot, it's extremely important to keep your photos organized. Obviously, with so many systems out there, I can't go into all, but I will share with you the system that I use. So like I said, I use Lightroom and Photoshop in post-production, and then sometimes I use Alien Skin for toning. So let's start at the beginning before I even remove my SD card from the camera, right? So I've finished a shoot, and you finish a shoot and you come home, and some people have a tendency to start going through their photos while they're still in the camera, and that's fine. The issue I take with that is that people tend to delete photos that they have a problem with, that they don't like, or the camera went off, or, you know, you accidentally photographed your feet. I don't do that. I take the SD card out and I import everything into Lightroom. Now, let me tell you why I do this. Well, when you're shooting an event, if you start going through your photos and you start deleting, a couple of things are going to happen. The first thing is, while you're deleting, you may miss another moment. You may miss a moment that shouldn't be missed, and that's a problem. The other issue is that the way our brains work, when you do something and you repeat it, it becomes habit. So it's very easy as you're going through photos, delete, 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 delete. Oops, I really didn't mean to delete that. It happens all the time. It's happened to me enough that I no longer delete. And that means if I do something like, you know, I accidentally hit the shutter while I'm doing something and I've got a nice photo of my shoes, so be it. It's not getting deleted, at least not then. Remember, on any SD card, you have more than enough memory to not have to delete any photos that you take accidentally. And if you don't have enough memory, then please consider upgrading your cards to something you're more comfortable with. So I have 16 gigabyte cards that I very rarely use. I mean, they're in my little think tank holder, but I rarely use them. I can guarantee you 99% of the time, if I'm shooting anything minimally, it's a 32 gigabyte card. I have many 32 gigabyte cards, and then I have 64 gigabyte cards. And then I have, you know, my extra storage 128 gigabyte card. But other than that, it's the 64s or the 32, and that's more than enough room for anything that you shoot, even if you're shooting in RAW. So if you're shooting in RAW and you happen to take a couple of photos of your feet, it's okay. Don't delete them while you're shooting at an event or, you know, you're doing a studio shoot or anything like that. Even after I've imported my photos, I don't immediately delete the photos that are not good. So if you are familiar with this process, what happens is once you take your SD card out of your camera and you put it into your computer or you put it into a card reader and hook it up to your computer, what happens is that the program, in my case Lightroom, will provide you with a view of all of the photos that are on the card. And at that point, you have the opportunity to delete the photos that are not good. For me, I still don't do it. I go ahead and I import everything. Because you never know, you may need to do something down the road like swap heads or move something into position, and you need a photo that you didn't think was really good, but it may serve a purpose. So I wouldn't delete any photos that I think are not good before all of your photos are imported into Lightroom or whatever camera manipulating or photo manipulating program that you use. After you insert your SD card into your computer for uploading or importing, before you import, Lightroom gives you the ability to tag your session. And I strongly suggest that you do this. And you want to tag this session, you want to tag these photos with obvious tags, such as wedding, fall wedding, spring wedding, beach shoot, first communion, birthday, park, model, lifestyle, boudoir, gardens. You want to provide as many tags as possible for the photo shoot. Use any tag that works and definitely use more than one because that helps you narrow down those specific photos even more. For example, if you're searching Lightroom a year from now and you go through your library and you want fall weddings, you just have to search for fall weddings and every photo that you've taken where you tagged fall wedding will come up. If, however, you did a fall wedding in the park or you've done a couple of fall weddings in the park and you want to show those to a potential client, if your tags are fall wedding and park, those photos will show up and you'll have easy access to them. So once you've tagged your photos, now you can import them into Lightroom, which stores all of your photos by dates. That's the default setting. That works for me. So once all my photos are in Lightroom, I go through them. I go through each and every photo. It's kind of like a quick fire, rapid rating system. I go through every photo and the only photos that I rate are ones that I consider 4 and above. So that's 4 and 5s. Now, when I first started doing this, I used to do what many people do, which is to assign a rating to each and every photo. And that's just unbelievably time consuming. There's no point in rating something that's a 0 or a 1. So, you know, if a 1 is the equivalent of a 0 and a 2 is not that much better than a 1 and a 3 is just mediocre. So are you really going to do anything with your photos that have no rating, a rating of 1, 2, or 3? For me, those are negligible photos. So I know I'm not going to use them. If I rate a photo as 4, that means it's a good photo. Maybe I just need to do some, you know, exposure adjustment, enhance a few things, crop a little, you know, make a more appealing crop for a more appealing photo, but it's a good photo. So it's going to be a 4 or a 5. Or you can look at a photo and determine it may not be that good of a crop, or it may not look like it deserves to be a 4. But if I crop it a certain way that emphasizes a particular look or a particular pose, then that elevates it to maybe a 4. So if that's the case, I would keep that and just rate it as a 4. So I go through all of my photos, and by the time I get through them all, I'm just left with 4s and 5s. While I'm doing this, I try my very best not to start editing the photo. I mentioned that I may crop, but I really, really, really try and avoid it. And I absolutely try and avoid making exposure adjustments or trying to manipulate colors while I'm doing this, you know, rapid rating, because that just slows you down and your mind starts to wander. And if you start working on a photo, you're going to keep working on a photo. And that's just very time consuming. So for me, the goal is to get through all of the photos, get my 4s and 5s lined up. So once I'm done with that, I now have the best photos and I put those into a collection in Lightroom. And here is where I will make my final decisions about photos that are similar. So let's say you took a couple of photos in sequence, you know, you took like 3 photos in sequence and they're relatively the same. They're just minor differences. Well, here's where I will look at those photos and I will choose which one is actually the best out of all three, because I'm not going to choose all three and I'm not going to edit off and retouch all three. Once I've made my decision as to which photo I'm actually going to edit, I make whatever adjustments in Lightroom I need to make to bring that photo to what I need for it to look like. If it requires some more advanced work, then what I do is I use the edit feature in Lightroom, and when you click on edit, it gives you the choice of exporting that photo to another program, including, of course, Photoshop. Lightroom will ask you if you want to export the photo as the original or with the adjustments that you've already made in Lightroom. So I always choose to export with the Lightroom adjustments. The photo is then exported into Photoshop. Now, this is not about Photoshop, so I'm not going to go through Photoshop steps, but I do whatever it is I need to do in Photoshop. As I finish, I go to save, not save as, save. And when you click on save, it sends your now Photoshopped finished photo back into Lightroom. The Lightroom screen opens, and when the Lightroom screen opens on the film strip down at the bottom, you will see your Photoshopped photo next to your Lightroom version of the photo. What I suggest that you do is that before you start manipulating a photo in Lightroom, you make what's called a virtual copy, and you can make hundreds of virtual copies. I like to keep my original photo, my photo as it was completed in Lightroom before going to Photoshop, and then my Photoshop finished image. Once my photo is finished in Photoshop and returned to Lightroom, in addition to the 4 or possibly 5 star rating, I then apply a color filter to designate that as a completely finished photo. So, you know, the colors are red, blue, yellow, green, and purple. So let's say blue. So my photo will appear with a blue frame around it in Lightroom and on that bottom strip. So now, when it comes to showing a client their photos, I'm simply going to go into Lightroom, go to the collection of the photos that were rated 4 and 5, and filter for photos that are 4 stars or higher and that have a blue frame. And those are the photos that I will put into a slideshow and show the client for potential purchase for either wall art albums or individual prints. So although I've run through this in a relatively short amount of time, this is a process that can take a couple of days based on the number of photos taken during the photo shoot, or if you happen to be an event photographer. Now here's something. All this time I've been talking about importing your photos into Lightroom and editing them in Lightroom and then Photoshop and then saving them in your Lightroom catalog. But when I started talking, I talked about the SD card that I put into my computer for importing. So when you ingest photos into Lightroom, and I believe other photo software, you're asked if you want to delete the photos once they're imported. For me, the answer is a big no, because I don't want the photos, I don't want the images on the SD card to be erased. So what I do is after the photos are imported, I remove that card from the back of my computer. And that card then sits on my desk while I continue to work on all of those photos. It's just a thing with me because it's like a temporary backup. Obviously, my photos are saved on an external drive and then another external drive. But there's just something about knowing, God forbid anything were to happen to those drives, I still have the original photos on the SD card. Also, remember, in my camera, like many DSLRs, there are two slots for photos. And typically, my second slot is a backup of my first slot. When I opened up my camera to take that SD card out to import the photos into Lightroom, I left that other card, that duplicate card, in the camera. So let's say something goes wrong with the SD card that I removed. I don't know, maybe walking towards my computer, I fall, I trip, and the card was in my hand and it cracked. Well, how unfortunate, but I also happen to have a backup SD card in my camera. It's a good idea to take every single precaution when it comes to protecting your photos and your clients' photos. Okay, so I think you get my point about being organized. I know it can be tedious and it can be a pain, but you know what's really a pain? When you need something and you can't find it. Or if you wait till last minute and you don't even have time to search, and then you have to sort of pull a Hail Mary. Or you have to go out and buy a piece of gear that you know you own, but you just can't find it and you need it. So it's much better to take the time to be organized up front, to organize your gear, to organize how you contact your clients, your members of your team, your hairstylist, your makeup artist, your clothing stylist if you use one. It's much better to keep some type of organized way of managing your vendors or your business partners. All of this seems like a lot of work. It's a lot of work up front, and it's a lot of work, to be honest with you, just once, because once you set it up, it's a piece of cake. Airtable may take you, I don't know, honestly, it didn't take that long to set up. It's just devising a table, putting in the columns for the information that you want. But once you do it, if you meet somebody new, if you have a potential new client or an actual new client or someone new to work with as a makeup artist or as an assistant, all you're doing is inputting their information, and you have that with you on your phone, on your tablet, anywhere where you have an internet connection, and now that's everywhere. So it makes sense to always be organized in everything you do as a photographer and in your business. Please click on the show notes where you can link to many of the products mentioned in this episode. Remember, I am not sponsored by anyone, but these are the products that I use and that help me in my photography business, and I'm sharing them with you. So the links have been provided so that you can review them yourself and gain some additional information. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Clued Up with me, your host, Maria B. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review on your preferred podcast listening platform. I really appreciate your support. When you rate, subscribe, and review, you're also helping other listeners find and enjoy this podcast. Until next time.